Welcome to Me Time, the podcast for women in midlife who've been taking care of everyone else and now say, it's my turn to take care of me. I'm Kim Aceto, health and self-care coach for women in midlife and your host. Thank you for spending your precious me time with me right now. Enjoy the show. Okay, so today I am here with Deirdre Timmons, and she wrote a book called Brain Candy that we're going to be talking about today. Let me tell you a little bit about Deirdre. So writing is about the only thing Deirdre can do. She's done it for the past 20 years for newspapers, remember those, magazines, and the information superhighway, and movies that were never made. That is not quite fair. She directed a doc on burlesque, A Wink and a Smile, that forever ruined her appreciation for live theater. If no clothes come off, what's the point? And Deirdre lives in Seattle. Deirdre, welcome to the Me Time Midlife Podcast.
Hello, thank you.
Yeah, it's great to have you here, and you're so close to me. I was in Seattle last weekend.
Oh, you were. You should have called me.
I know. I didn't even think about it, but it was just for a night. Yeah. So anyway, Deirdre, as we get started, I'm going to ask you the question I ask every guest, since this is the Me Time Midlife Podcast. Share with us, what is something or a few things you enjoy doing during your me time?
It's kind of all over the map. I like to walk and garden, and, you know, I have two dogs, so, they take up a lot of my time. I like to cook and spend time with family. Okay, those are the boring things that I like. Who doesn't like all that?
Right.
I do go to a lot of live theater, and I still go to burlesque. You know, I just can't resist the beautiful, stunning, marvelous, funny, dark performers in that theater world. And you know, I get on these little jigs. Like right now, I just got tired of going on walks and seeing litter everywhere I go. So I've become the crazy lady in the neighborhood, taking my pickup stick and a trash bag. And every walk, I just pick up garbage along the way. And people will ask me, do you work for the city or who are you? I'm like, no, I'm just a neighbor and I'm tired of seeing garbage. So I'm picking it up.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh my gosh, I picked up so much.
Yeah, I saw your blog, some pictures of some trash you picked up.
I know, isn't that crazy?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, all those areas in the blog are clean now.
Oh, right. Okay, nice. Well, that's nice. That's really nice.
Yeah, you like and to get I out read and knit and, you know, go to films. I'm just kind of a city girl.
Yeah.
You know.
Great.
Yeah.
Have you lived in Seattle your entire life, or you're from the Midwest, right?
I'm from the Midwest. I'm from Wichita, Kansas, and we moved here when I was 11. So really, this feels like home to me. Mm-hmm. When I go back to Kansas, I'm like, yeah, it doesn't feel like home anymore.
Right.
However, the curious thing about that is when we recorded the book for Audible, I heard a Kansas accent in my voice.
Oh, really? What does a Kansas accent sound like?
I don't know how to describe it. It's just a titch different from a Northwest voice accent. And just, I can't even describe the difference. But it was funny. I thought, we moved here when I was 11. How can I still have just a shadow of that accent? But then I thought of my friends who grow up in England and they move out here when they're children and they always sound just a little British, you know? Mm-hmm. So anyway, that was funny.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. So
you moved to Seattle and you have, first of all, I loved your book and I did not think that I was going to finish it in time. And I will admit that I just finished it about an hour ago and I'm so glad that I was able to. I mean, I haven't gone through a book that fast in a long time and it's not, and you know what? halfway through, I was like, oh no, I don't think I'm going to be able to finish it, but, you know, maybe I should skim it. And I was like, no, it's just way too good to skim. And so I was like, I am going to set aside time to make sure I go through this book because honestly, Deirdre, like it's a page turner. You know, again, when I got it, I did not think I was going to finish it, but it is so good. I had a hard time putting it down. I don't know if writing is the only thing that you can do, but you are an excellent writer. And I really, really enjoyed the book.
Well, thank you so much, Kim. Yeah, I'm getting that response from everybody. And I think part of why it goes so fast is it has a lot of dialogue in it. So I don't have these dense pages of just, you know, paragraph upon paragraph. I grew up professionally in newspapers. You know, I learned to keep my paragraphs tight and short. And then going into screenwriting and studying that, I learned how to incorporate dialogue. Like screenwriting is all about dialogue. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what makes it read so fast is the paragraphs are short and there's a lot of dialogue.
Yeah, definitely. And also just the way, you know, when a really good writer, you can tell a really good writer because it's the way that the sentences are just so beautiful.
Aww,
you know, thank you. Yeah. And that's how I know, like I'm reading a really good author, right? Because, there's a lot of dialogue and there's a lot of spaces in between and all that. So it's easy to get through, but again, I didn't want to skim it because the writing is just so beautiful.
Aww.
It really is.
Yeah. Thank you so much. That's so nice to hear.
Yeah, it's really great. So had you written a book before this book or was it just newspapers and stuff like that?
Well, newspapers, then magazines, then internet, you know, production, and then scripts and film scripts. And then I kept a blog while I was sick. Actually, I started the blog when I was going to China with my family, and I wanted my parents, who were elderly at the time, to be able to track what we were doing in China. So I started this blog, and I so loved like being able to write from my own voice about the things I see in the world. And I just kept it up. And then when I got sick, I thought, oh, I have to blog about this because I really had no memory at the time, even before treatment. My memory was for shit. Mm-hmm. And so I started blogging about it so I could go back and taking pictures so I could go back and say, okay, we've done this, we've done this, we've done this, and keep track of things. And it was through the blogging, which I highly recommend to anybody who's going through something, a difficult trial, be it health or work or personal, because you remove yourself from your story and you write about it for an audience. Mm. And it gives you a whole different perspective as opposed to journaling, mm-hmm. where you're sort of navel gazing and talking to yourself. If you're writing for a public, you have to step out of your story and record it that way. And it was a great way to also just sort of take the piss out of the treatment and the disease and stuff. I could write about it as if it was a character, mm-hmm. and I was a character. And that kind of gave me just a really nice sort of removal from what was a pretty serious situation.
Right.
What was your question?
Yeah. So you still have the short-term memory loss, I see.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
It hasn't gotten any better. Mm-hmm. It's embarrassing when I meet people and they're hugging me and kissing me and I'm like,
right. Who are you? Yeah. Right. Okay. So for the audience who's listening and maybe doesn't know about your book, your book is called Brain Candy. And, kind of the subtitle here is One Woman's Hilarious and Harrowing Journey Through Cancer and Alzheimer's. And so there's a picture of you and your mom in the front. I'm guessing that's your mom, right? And yep. You're the one with the cancer and she's the one with the Alzheimer's. It kind of goes back and not back and forth. It's just, there's the reality of you having cancer and that's obviously not a funny thing, but then just your experience through it and the things that are happening to you and how you're dealing with them. I mean, you make it funny. so it's a light at the same time, heavy read. It's kind of how I see it, but so deep too, you know? And that's what I really enjoyed. So let's talk a little bit about the book.
All right.
First of all, I have some questions. So yes. Your mom got Alzheimer's in her 50s.
She did. Actually, my brother and I think I wrote this in the book. We started to see it in her late 40s. Mm. You know, she would just lose a shoe and it would be right in front of her, or she'd forget how to open an umbrella. Mm. And when she finally got a cash card, she could not figure out how to use it. So we sort of, and she would blow up about nothing. And we would kind of under our breath say Alzheimer's, because it is so prevalent in our family. But in her 50s, she was finally diagnosed with right. it and had to quit working. And so she had it for a long time. That's how many. She died at 78. Mm-hmm. And we saw it in her late 40s. So that's 40, 56. That's 30 years.
Wow.
with a, you know, mind kind of going on the fritz very slowly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But she was always, always funny. She never lost touch with her sense of humor, even though her brain was completely gone. She didn't know who anybody was. She was still funny. It was right. kind of amazing.
Yeah. I remember sometimes in the book where she just makes these jokes and, you know, it is really funny. And so let me ask you, you call her Kathy in the book.
You know, I go back and forth. I called her face-to-face mom, mm-hmm. but when I was talking to other people, I would call her Kathy.
Right.
Yeah, so it kind of vacillates. I think in the dialogue, I'll say things like, it's your daughter, mom. I'm your daughter, mom.
Right.
I tell Kathy, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know why I did it that way.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. At first I was like, wait, is Kathy another character here or no? Oh, that's your mom.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. 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 Okay. So that's your mom's side. So your mom had Alzheimer's and, you know, you went and visited her and dealt with her and walked her dog and did all of these things. Mm-hmm. And then you get this rare brain tumor that normally affects babies. And you actually become like this celebrity in the medical world, right? Because you get this really rare brain tumor.
Yeah. I was kind of famous with all those neurologists out there.
Right. And what year is this? Is it like early 2000?
I think I was diagnosed in 2013. Mm. And I had been displaying the symptoms for about 3 years before then.
Right.
And it just started real slow, just like I'm a little dizzy and I thought I was hungover. And so I quit drinking and I thought, wow, I drank a lot because I'm still hungover and it's a year later of no drinking.
Right.
And, you know, Deirdre. And then as it got increasingly worse, I was taking care of my mother and she kept saying, I'm dizzy, I'm dizzy, I'm dizzy. And it was kind of a song. I'm like, me too, me too, me too. Like, I thought I was getting my Alzheimer's.
Right.
I never in a million years would I had thought, you know, oh, this could be a brain tumor. I mean, we don't have cancer in my family, not one lick of cancer in my whole family on all sides. So I just never thought that was a possibility.
Right.
But we have Alzheimer's in my family, mm-hmm. you know? So I thought, well, it's my Alzheimer's. Here we go.
Yeah. And then your dad, did he have diabetes?
He did. Okay. He did. He was morbidly obese. Mm. Fat as a kid, but became morbidly obese. And by the time he died, he had lost 200 pounds and he was like still 300 and something. Mm-hmm. So he did. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm curious, like your mom seemed to really kind of care about weight, right? She made sure she was thin. She wanted you to be thin. Like that was really important. But then she marries this obese man. That's kind of strange.
Well, no. So when they met, he was on, I can't remember what they called it, not speed, but he was a form of speed. And
like Adderall or some kind of...
something like that. It was the 50s and everybody was doing it. And he was skinny for the first and only time in his life. So she met him and he was thin and drove a motorcycle and he was cool. They got married. He went off the speed. And then he just started to kind of grow and grow and grow and grow. Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense now.
Yeah.
Okay. So you call your, I didn't understand what brain candy was until like the middle of the book where you're like, you decided to
explain it.
Yeah. You explain brain candy and then you name your tumor Sarah, right? Which I think if I remember was just a name that came to you, like there's no Sarah in your life that you know of, right?
No, it just came out of me with that Reiki woman. She's like, and what is its name? And what is her name? I'm like, it's Sarah. And I went, what?
Right. And then you spell it with S-A-R-A, right? So it's a Sarah without an H. There's different.
Yeah.
Yeah. For some reason. Yeah,
maybe I misspelled her name. Sorry, Sarah.
Right. Okay, so you get this diagnosis and something I want to read here, just a short paragraph, because I thought it was really touching. And it's a lot about kind of, what I talk about as far as, you know, when you're in midlife, you know, kind of having this reflection time and all that kind of stuff. And so this one part kind of toward the middle of the book, when you get diagnosed, you at one point, Jack, who's your husband, he said, Jack and I peruse the Saturday farmer's market and settle into an intimate Italian restaurant overlooking the bay. This is so nice, I think, thoroughly exhausted from the drive. We order wine and Jack takes my hands across the table. Why don't we do this all the time, I wonder. When was the last time Jack took my hands in his? Or when was the last time we traveled alone? Or when was the last time we even shared a romantic evening? And so I just thought that was really sweet, you know, and thinking about when was the last time we did this, and it took something like cancer to kind of get you to think about those things or what was it that, do you remember?
I think it was that. It was just when you're going on in life and you're busy, you're raising your children, you're working at jobs, you're taking care of the dogs and the house and the laundry and everything. You just lose sight of people, even friends, you know, and your focus has to be on your child. And then at least I did, and my husband did, we just kind of forgot about each other and went about with our little middle-class lives, taking care of all these unimportant details.
Right.
But the big important one was each other. And somehow we lost touch with that. And so when I was diagnosed to die within a month or a year, it just shook us both down to go like, oh my gosh, you, I remember you, I love you.
Right.
And you've kind of been out of my life for the past 10, 15 years. Mm. And it was a wake up call to love, really. Mm-hmm. And you know, there were times where I thought, I don't even know if he loves me anymore. But when I was diagnosed and he broke down, I had never seen him cry. Mm-hmm. And I was so kind of, I don't know, happy. I was like, so what? I'm dying. He loves me.
Right. Yeah.
Kind of bittersweet, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the way you talk about Jack in the book is he sounds like a great guy. I mean, first of all, the way you talk about him, he seems like a very handsome man.
He's incredibly, he's very handsome.
Yeah.
He's on my blog, so you can see
him. He is. Okay. I must have missed him because you have pictures of friends and all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah. Incidentally, he has three restaurants now, not just one.
He has three now.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Are they all and barbecues?
Yep. They're all the same. Jack's Barbecue, and they're in Seattle, and they're just.
Oh,
they're,
I'll have to come to one.
Oh. By all means, they're wildly popular.
Really?
And, but that was the beginning of the first one.
Wow.
So he's also, sorry, he's also building a school in Isla Mujera to teach the local people English, because they have all these tourists there and they can't communicate with each other. So they're building this big, beautiful school, and it's,
That's
he's done really well.
Yeah. And this is kind of like the second half of his career, because he was in midlife as well. I'm assuming you guys were a similar age, right? Where he was working at, what is this, like a, like an IT corporation or something. Okay. And then he decides that he wants to open a barbecue restaurant.
You know? And it was so rando. I'm like,
right. And at the same time, you're getting diagnosed. And so he's trying to get investors for this restaurant. And then you have one daughter named Rose, and she sounds like a great kid too. I mean, really never caused you any problems or anything like that.
No, we used to be worried about her, because we'd say, do you want to go out to the park? And she'd go, no. And she'd look up from her books, and we'd finally cajole her into going to the park, and she would just lie down in the sand and look up at the sky.
Right.
You're like, Rose, come on, play, child. But yeah, she's in Asia right now. She's actually in Tibet as we speak. And then going to come back and study to be an RN, a nurse.
Oh, great. Great.
Yeah, it is great.
Yeah.
I'm so glad she doesn't want to be a writer, because writers make no money.
Yeah,
I'm
like, right.
Oh, you want to be a nurse, you'll have a real career.
So nursing is something that, I mean, did she have an interest in that before you spent so much time in the hospital? And
yeah, she's wanted to be a midwife. Since she was young, like 13. And she studied what she assisted doulas, who are just doulas. They're not midwives. And then as she started talking to midwives, she realized she really wanted to be more of a registered nurse midwife, so she could work in hospitals and do other work other than just deliver babies if there are no babies in. You know, so, but my mother was a nurse, and they had a great relationship. I don't know where this came from, but I'm really happy.
Yeah, I'm really that's happy. Right. Your mom was a nurse. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Okay. So you have Jack and Rose. These are, I mean, two great people in your life that love you and totally just are there for you throughout this whole time. And then you start getting your treatments, and they're crazy. And you know, you, and anyway, people can read the book and kind of see what you had to go through.
Yeah. I think just for perspective for the readers, that the typical radiation treatment is 10 to 15 minutes, and mine were 2 to 4 hours. And the radiation people, the techs said, we've never radiated anybody this much. So it was a long time to be really just plastered down and just to have the radiation go through me.
Yeah.
And it was painful, because it, you know, it's uncomfortable. The mask is on you so tight.
Right.
And you know, you're
to be still and
completely still. Yeah. I mean, you're in full lockdown. You're in a case that wraps around your body. You can't move. I think at one point in the book, I do say the only thing I could move during radiation was my tongue and were my tongue and my toes. Mm-hmm. And that's it. I couldn't move my hands, my fingers, I couldn't blink, open my eyes, twitch my nose. I couldn't do anything.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So something that I was so happy to read was that you have these amazing friends that set up what you called a meal train to kind of bring food over for you and your family while you're going through all of this. And you had like all your meals covered. And the way you talk about your friends, I mean, they're just so supportive. And tell me a little bit more about your friends.
Well, first of all, I have to say, if anybody listening to this has a friend who is ill or is ill, have somebody sign up a meal train for you, organize a meal train. You can go to just mealtrain.com. It was the most incredible thing. I didn't have to shop. I didn't have to worry about cooking dinner every night. All I had to do was sit on my couch and wait for the doorbell to ring, and somebody would bring a whole fresh new meal. And we had spent, the person who set up my meal train specified that I had to have organic, low sugar, all this stuff. So people were bringing food from their gardens and making incredible stuff. And it was this community that I had always had, but I had never really thought about it. But when I went out to all my friends and family and people in the burlesque world, they all just rallied around me. It was amazing. Mm. It was amazing. It was the first time I really understood the value of community and the importance of sustaining a community around yourself and your family. Mm-hmm. And I just can't thank everybody that I knew and know during that time for, I mean, had it not been for them, it would have been a lot more difficult to just get through it all. Oh. They would come walk my dog, you know, they just, oh, they were amazing. So yeah, community, 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 you know, get to know it. And if you don't have one now, start working on it, you know. Take a pottery class or something, or, you know, just start baking cookies for your neighbors, or I don't know what, but get to know the people in your life, really know them, like in a valuable way, not just, did you see the football game, or, you know, gossip or anything like that. Like, be a kind and loving human, and people will be kind and loving back to you.
Yeah. Yeah. It really went to show me just, I guess, you know, the kind of person you are to have friends like this. You only have friends like that when you are kind of loving and generous too. You don't talk about that, but are you about to say
you're amazing, Kim?
Oh, you're amazing. Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm pretty easygoing, you know, and I think people find that nice because a lot of people are not easygoing. So I do have a lot of friends who just feel safe around me to be themselves.
Yeah. And it seems like you're a lot of fun too.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. That definitely comes through.
It tends to bleed over into the darkness. Like, I have this favorite thing to say to one of my most beloved young men in my extended family. And that's, I'll see you in hell every time I see him. Or, you know, don't forget to wear your underpants, you know. But yeah, I've always been the class clown, and it just comes naturally to me. And I can't really be serious. And when I am serious, I'm very unhappy, you know. So, humor is my big coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. And it's one that I fully encourage everybody to embrace.
Yes, agreed. Agreed. So I'm going to read one part here that your doctor, kind of how your doctor wanted you to take care of yourself. And I'm doing it more for the audience because I'm a health and wellness coach for women in midlife. And so I just thought that this was interesting. The doctor said, you asked him, you know, anything else that you need me to do? You know, first he said, don't have more than 3 glasses of wine a week. And then you said, anything else? And he said, everyday good habits, exercise, walk, spend time outside, drink a lot of water, avoid sugars and processed food, get plenty of rest. Yoga is good. Massage is helpful. Acupuncture is great. So I read that because this is how, it's funny, this was your recipe to get healthy, but this is the way we should be living.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. No, it's the way to live. I tell you what, I mean, I've even gone off all my supplements. I was on all kinds of brain supplements and stuff, and I'm just trying to walk every day and get outside. It's just basic healthful living. There's no mystery. Just stay away from, you know, sugars. They're bad. And they're inflammatory. And I'm sort of not a gluten person. Mm-hmm. But that's not from any dogma. It's just I don't like bread and potatoes and It's just not food I like. So when people say, we're going out for pizza for dinner, I'm like, oh, you know, so I eat the topping. And I've just always been that way. I've never really been a fan of bread and things like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, just everyday healthful eating is and walking and talking to people and reading books and, you know.
Yes.
Just
me time. Me time.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And so you share that 1 in 3 American women will develop some sort of cancer during their lives. And 1 in 2
Isn't that scary?
It is scary, right? So, you know, the best that we can do is just try to take care of ourselves as best as we can, right? I mean, that doesn't mean eating perfectly / healthy all the time, you know, having fun and doing all of that, but,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, but living a healthy life. So we're kind of running out of time. So I want to ask you now. So obviously you made it through. You're still alive, and
yep.
you made it.
Actually, you're speaking to a ghost.
Right. Am I dead too? So I'm curious, just kind of for the last couple of minutes here. So how has having cancer and surviving it changed your perspective on life?
Okay, this is going to sound really stupid, but if I had it to do over again, I would. Because it really made me form some thoughts about life after death and the value of this life here now. And I would say it was kind of a great experience. And I mean, I can say that because I lived and I didn't lose any limbs or anything like that. But I would tell people who are diagnosed and they don't get, you know, a diagnosis of, oh, you have 2 weeks. This doesn't apply to those people, but just step back and say, okay, what do I want to experience with this? And the grappling with death was life-changing for me. As I said in the book, I grew up in an atheist household, and it brought me to my own conclusions about life after death. And, you know, it was beautiful. And also it makes me appreciate people when they say they're sick. I get it. You know, I can really have an honest conversation with them, whether it's cancer or Crohn's disease or whatever it is. I can really talk to them and, you know, and be completely empathetic, which I wasn't before. You know, how can you be if you don't know? But now I know. So it does let you into a secret world and it changes you. You know, I'm much more, I was never an impatient person, but I just have all the patience in the world now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And love too. I just, I don't waste time gossiping or hating or judging. It's just opened me up to the really deep importance of love.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. Well, Deirdre, thank you so much for coming on to the Me Time Midlife podcast. You have a website, deirdretimmons.com, which I'll put the link in the show notes for everybody to go check out. You have a blog. You, of course, have this book, Brain Candy, which I encourage people to read. It's excellent. I really loved it. So again, thank you so much for sharing your story, for writing this book. And I hope there's some more writing in your future that we get to.
Oh, there is.
Oh, good, good. Well, we'll definitely have you back for that, okay?
Okay, Kim. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Deirdre. If you find the Me Time Midlife podcast valuable, there are many ways you can support it. The best way is to simply tell your midlife friends about it. It also helps the show's visibility if you rate and review it on iTunes, Stitcher, or simply directly in your Apple Podcasts app if you listen to the show that way. And if you want more me time in your life and continue the conversations we have on the show with other women on a similar journey, consider joining our Me Time Midlife Community on Facebook. Simply search for Me Time Midlife Community in your Facebook search bar, or go to metimemidlifepodcast.com to learn more. Thank you again for listening. And until next time, remember, you've been taking care of everyone else. It's your turn to take care of you.